Hey everybody, welcome back to Sales is King. Dan Sixsmith, glad to be with you. I am your host, going on our seventh year coming up in 2024. Crazy, crazy, crazy. We've got a great episode today. My recent interview with Sonia Price, who is the founder of Dynamo Careers. And we talk about a wide range of subjects, including, you know, are we all going back into the office versus virtual? What are her thoughts on that? We talk about some of her successes and how she has helped a number of executives pivot in their careers, move forward, make 3 and 4 and 5 times the amount of money, and just an overall conversation about what the job market looks like. So I know you'll enjoy it, and we'll talk soon. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Sales is King. This is Dan Sixsmith. I'm your host. Very happy to have Sonia Price with us today of Dynamo Careers. Sonia, welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me here, Dan. I'm super excited for our conversation today.
Yeah, me too. I think this is very, kind of top of mind to a lot of people, certainly, thinking about your career, thinking about the job market, how could people potentially advance, do well, continue to evolve. It's sort of a tricky economy we're in right now, right? So how would you characterize the job market today based on your experience? Is it a buyer's market? Is it a seller's market? Does it depend on the industry or the role? What are you seeing?
Well, it always depends upon the industry and the role itself. But I would say that right now we're probably in more of a buyer's market than we are a seller's market. So, the market is a little bit flooded at the moment, particularly mm-hmm. in the tech industry, just because mm-hmm. we've seen so many layoffs happen over the last several months. But I've been doing this for 10 plus years, and there's always ups and downs and ebbs and flows in the job market. You know, we thought that initially when the pandemic hit, we thought, oh my gosh, how is this going to impact the job market? Well, we ended up having a hiring frenzy as part mm-hmm. of the pandemic. And I think quite honestly, we probably overhired a little bit during the yes. pandemic. And then now we're seeing, the ebb and flow and the, things are starting to normalize and kind of equalize as part of that. Mm-hmm. But if people are looking for a job, I don't think that it's dire circumstances. There are definitely companies who are still hiring. We're starting to come to the end of the calendar year, which is the fiscal year for many organizations, not all. But, typically I do see some hiring happen right towards the end of the fiscal year. And mm-hmm. then personally and professionally, I think that, Q1 of next year, we're going to start to see a little bit of a rebound effect and, see how all of this starts to shake out.
That's great. And so
I would say one other thing that's probably worth mentioning, if I can just throw this in there real quick. I think another big thing that's really impacting the job market right now too, is that, during the pandemic, most companies shifted towards remote work, really mm-hmm. out of necessity. And some organizations just decided to, abandon having a physical office space and went 100% remote. But there are a number of really big players that went remote, and now they're kind of going through this transition of bringing people back into the office. And I think that's also having a really big impact on the job market because, many, many employees actually really appreciate working from home and having that remote flexibility. But a lot of employers are starting to, call people back into the office. And that's having a big impact on the job market as well, because, a lot of people are still wanting to have remote work. So they may be looking for full-time remote opportunities. And then the big players that did all the layoffs and are now starting to call people back into the office. I think that's also, having a big shift in the job market as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The party might be over for some folks who, enjoy the remote work. I know the financial services companies in New York were kind of the first ones to bring everybody back, mm-hmm. The Goldman Sachs's and the Chase, JP Morgan's. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. So do you think there's going to be more of a trend now toward, you know, back in the office? Do you see that that's where this is heading, or will it be largely kind of split depending on the company?
I think it'll be split depending upon the company, because there are a number of organizations that just committed to going 100% full-time remote. So those opportunities are still out there. They definitely exist. But I think for a lot of the bigger players, you know, I do a lot of work in the tech industry. So, you know, Amazon and Microsoft and Google, like a lot of those big, big tech companies are definitely starting to call their employees back into the office. And, you know, there's been a lot of, there's been a big shakeup around this, quite honestly, because there are a number of employees who are like, no, I like my work-life balance. Like, I'm used to working from home. My family likes having me around. And so, I mean, there actually has been some controversy around this. There have been employee groups that have, you know, spoken up and are maybe staging a coup is a very, very strong, strong way of saying it. But there have been some employee groups being very outspoken about this and saying, no, that's not what we want. But meanwhile, you know, the employers who are paying the paychecks, you know, are still kind of moving forward and saying, okay, well, you know, I think these big employers are starting to ease into it. And I don't know if we'll ever go back to 100% full-time in office. I think most companies are doing a hybrid approach right now, where they're doing like 2 or 3 days in the office and then a few days remote. So it'll be interesting to see how this continues to play out, because, you know, in the world of work, we need to have a situation that works for both parties. And so I think both parties need to be very clear about what their goals and intentions are and why they need to be in person or why it's okay to work from home, and to find a solution that's actually workable for both sides.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I've heard some stories too of folks that are just refusing to go back. And I think it depends on, you know, your version of how valuable you are, to see what you can get away with, I guess. But it'll be tricky. So the tech industry is a focus of yours. What are some of the hot positions? You know, what are some of the ones that you are involved in or that you see trending, you know, toward the top of people's wish lists?
Well, developer positions have always been in high demand. I mean, at least for the last couple decades, I think we'll continue to see that for the foreseeable future. Although I think that the more senior level positions are going to be much more in demand as we continue to move forward, simply because of the onslaught of AI tools. You know, so I think having more strategy and more ability to kind of connect the pieces together is going to become even more increasingly important. And I think we're going to see this across most functional roles. I think no matter what role that you're in and where you serve, having, you know, having a core foundation of AI skills, you know, knowing the basic AI tools and how to use them for your industry and your particular role is going to become increasingly more important. So regardless whether you're working in marketing or operations or product development or wherever it might be, you know, having a good sense of what's happening with AI and how that's impacting your industry and your particular role is going to be very, very, very important. So if you want to remain high in demand, I think, you know, knowing more about AI is definitely going to be a ticket moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such an explosive area right now, and it's just, you know, moving so quickly and there's so much, but you kind of have to teach yourself on some of this. You know, I've looked at a lot of the new kind of marketing tools and there's a lot of great stuff. And of course, folks are worried about, you know, being replaced by AI. It sounds like that might be overblown. You know, it's more of that, how can it supplement you? But, you know, it really depends. So when you're talking to people today, what do you think is the top couple of reasons people are not happy and they're looking to potentially make a change? Is it largely financial? Is it more about the supervisor? What are some of the issues that you're running into?
Yeah, I think quite honestly, one of the biggest reasons that I see that people want to shift and change is that they just don't have the internal growth opportunities that they're looking for. So, you know, if they want to become a specialist in a specific area, or they want to move into management or move into higher levels of leadership, oftentimes those opportunities either don't exist or they're not made available. So, you know, I think, you know, one of the biggest things that organizations can be doing to retain top talent is to make sure that there really is solid career paths inside of an organization, and that people are actively getting the opportunities that they want and need to grow their skill set and continue to move forward. I would say that's the number one reason that I talk to people. You know, of course, more money is always nice. And I do have those clients who come to me that are saying like, okay, you know, it's time for me to, you know, it's time for me to make more money. I know that I'm behind the market rate pay. I know that I could be making $20,000, $50,000, $80,000 more per year. And, you know, those situations really do exist where, you know, if someone's been with an organization for a long period of time, they most often are going to lag behind the market rate pay. And this is one of the reasons that I generally suggest to people, you know, switch jobs every 2, 3, 5 years.
Right.
You know, and I give different recommendations based on where people are in their career, whether you're early stage, middle stage, or late stage. You know, if you're in an early stage career, change jobs every 1 to 2 years. If you're in a middle stage of your career, you know, maybe every 3 to 4 to 5 years. By the time that in your later stage career, hopefully you found a home that you can kind of hang out with and grow and, you know, make a bigger impact with your career. But even then, it's still perfectly fine to be, you know, shifting and changing roles and either internally at the organization where you're going to get a big jump in pay or go elsewhere. And generally, if you go to a new external company, that's usually where you're going to get the biggest gains in your, you know, your overall compensation, like in making a big jump or a big increase in your compensation.
Sure. Do you think people are getting a little bit of a pass today if they've jumped around a bit more than usual, kind of in the whole pandemic era, with companies kind of going, you know, up and down and around and potentially out of business? Or are employers still looking at that as kind of instability and worried that they may just be here for a short time and gone?
You know, I think for sure. You know, there's definitely probably more flexibility these days just because there has been so many changes in the market over the last several years. I mean, with the pandemic and then the economic recession and layoffs and all of that, you know, but I would be very clear, you know, if you are a job seeker and you're looking for your next opportunity, I would actually call that out on your resume. Because what happens is when a potential employer looks at a candidate resume, usually the first time that they're looking at it, they're giving it a 7-second scan. And this is, by the way, this is after the search algorithms have already done the tough work of finding, you know, the top relevant candidates for a particular role, right? So it's like after the ATS or the LinkedIn search algorithms have, like, you know, found a subset of all of the applicants or interesting candidates for a particular open role, then a recruiter or a hiring manager is going to look at, you know, your resume or your LinkedIn profile. And the research shows us that they do a 7-second scan. So when they're looking at your resume, you know, they may scan all the information at the top, but quite often what they do is they jump right to your work history and they say, what was your job title? Where did you work? How long were you there? What was your job title? Where did you work? How long were you there? And very quickly, in a matter of microseconds, they are putting together a comprehensive story of who do they think that you are as a professional and what do you have to offer them, you know, as a candidate for their open position. And so if you do have a gap in your work experience, it's really helpful to just call it out.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes what I'll do is I'll put it in parentheses right next to the, you know, your actual job position. And if you were laid off, you know, say laid off or downsized due to economic conditions, you know, whatever reason that it is, like if you have a gap in your work experience, it's helpful to go ahead and call it out, because then they're not left with question marks wondering, well, what happened? Did you get fired? Did you quit? You know, what have you been doing with your time? And I think generally up to about a year is definitely acceptable. You know, for mostly any reason, it's okay to have a gap in work experience for up to 1 year. They're still going to want to know what have you been doing during that time period. But if you have a gap that's longer than 1 year, then it absolutely needs some sort of explanation. And you need to be prepared to answer these questions no matter what, because they will come up in an interview. And if you don't have a very good answer as to, you know, what have you been doing with your time off, you know, that will probably raise red flags and maybe could actually be a disqualifier for you to move forward in the process.
Yeah, very interesting. So I guess people are still reading resumes these days. So you're working with folks to help kind of maximize how these things read. What are some of the tricks of the trade on that? And then I want to ask you about, you know, kind of good old fashioned networking and LinkedIn and all of that good stuff. But in terms of a resume, are there any kind of new school approaches that folks should be thinking about?
Well, the resume has kind of, there's not too many changes on the resume, quite honestly. What I will say, you know, so it's like the ATS systems and your LinkedIn profile, they both go hand in hand. So don't forget about your LinkedIn profile as well. But, you know, there's a pretty standard setup for these kinds of things, and you need to know the format. So maybe that's one thing worth mentioning is that I oftentimes see people who get really creative with their resume formats. They design it in Illustrator, you know, and they do all these things that it's like the ATS system does not know how to read an Illustrator file. In fact, the ATS systems still mostly know how to read a Word doc. So even if you're uploading a PDF format, sometimes those systems don't understand how to read those PDF formats, especially if you've added in a bunch of columns and tables and all kinds of interesting things. The best format for your resume is a very simplified format that makes it very easy for a computer-generated system to just quickly, you know, read exactly the words that are on the page. You know, so go with very simple formatting, but also utilize formatting to your advantage. So there's really two things that we're trying to solve for here is that we need the computer generated systems, those search algorithms, to be able to search and extract the right keywords and the right key phrases from your resume. And then we also need to be able to pass that 7-second test. So when somebody actually opens up your resume or they're staring at your LinkedIn profile, if they give it that 7-second test, is it in a format that's actually readable and easily digestible for the reader? So you can think about it. If you put yourself in the shoes of a usability engineer and you, what is the key bits of information that you want them to focus on? And how have you designed the information on the page so that they can easily, you know, what are the words that pop off the screen to give your reader that sense of who are you as a professional? Now, I think the most important thing to say here is that this whole thing, you know, searching for a job, it's a marketing and sales game. So you have to be aware of what is your brand story and what is the marketing and the messaging that you're telling your intended audience. And sometimes you need to tweak and optimize your messaging for that intended audience. So it's great to have a really good idea of like, what exactly are you going for? And I oftentimes come across people who, you know, I say, oh, what kinds of jobs are you applying for? And they're applying to like 5 or 6 different key targeted types of roles. If you have a single resume that you're using to apply to 5 or 6 different roles, it's probably going to be working against you. What you want to do is get extreme clarity up front of what are you actually looking for, and then make sure that your entire messaging is very clearly articulated specifically to that target role. And that needs to carry through the entire process. So your resume, your LinkedIn profile, your cover letter, and then how do you talk about yourself in networking and interviewing conversations? And does the whole story match? Is this a comprehensive story of who are you as a professional, and what do you have to offer the potential employer that's hiring for this exact specific open role?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, an interview, a job interview, like you and I've been talking kind of ahead of time, is really nothing more than a sales call, right? So you've got to do all of the research, all of the homework. And I'm sure, when it gets to the Q&A time, that's one of the big difference makers. But I think, and let me know if you see this, but your ability to really understand what they're looking for and the issues they're trying to solve is going to be much more important than just talking generally about what you can do. Because many interviewers will say, "Tell me about yourself," or "Tell me about your last job." But it would be probably much more impactful to talk about it in the context of what they're trying to solve and try and get a little more targeted, and personalized. Is that kind of the case?
Absolutely, for sure, for sure. One of the key phrases that I always tell my clients is think like a consultant and act like a marketer. So when you're in an interview conversation, you're actually there to help the employer solve their problems. Like they wouldn't be hiring for an open role if they didn't have some sort of problem or a set of problems that they're trying to solve. So when you read through the job description, you need to be thinking through, okay, what is the problem that they're actually trying to solve here? And how am I the one to help them solve their problems? And then when you're in the interview, you always want to be showcasing yourself as a problem solver. And you want to highlight key examples, actual results where you've already solved those types of problems. And if you're not clear on exactly what the job is, then that's the perfect opportunity for you to ask clarifying questions. Because you want to make sure that when you're answering their questions, that you're answering it in the most clear and succinct way that makes sense to them. So the thing is that a lot of job descriptions, it's very hard to articulate what a job actually is in a couple paragraphs of text. And so, when that's a great first starting point, but that doesn't mean that you know everything about the job in order to sell yourself as a top candidate. So throughout all of your interactions with the companies, whether you're talking to the recruiter or the hiring manager or coworkers or senior leadership or whatnot, you want to be asking clarifying questions throughout the process. So think like a consultant. If you were coming in, you were getting hired as a consultant to come in and help solve this very specific, problem, or you're getting hired to help them, launch a key initiative or whatever it is. What kinds of questions would you be asking as a consultant to help know, what should you put in your SOW if you're going to, create a statement of work? Like, how would you even know what you're there to solve for? And then in real time, while you're there in the interview, you want to be answering their questions in a customized fashion. So you actually want to tweak your language so that when you're delivering your work success stories, you want to show them, oh, hey, yeah, so I understand that this is the problem that you're trying to solve. Let me actually tell you an example of how I've solved a very similar problem with a previous employer. And here's the exact results that I produced. And if it makes sense, sometimes you have to tie, connect the dots for them or tie a pretty bow on it so that, if your past work experience doesn't exactly relate to what it is that they're trying to do, then connect the dots, tie a pretty bow on it where you say, oh, and I can imagine that this might be particularly relevant for you because of how you're trying to solve this problem with this system. That's exactly what I did, with this other system and this other company that I worked with. So really, think like a consultant, act
Like
like a
that.
marketer, be a salesperson, and show how you are the number one top candidate for this open position. Because most of these jobs, they have 200 to 400 people applying for them, and you getting the job is a bit of a needle in a haystack. So you have to do everything in your power to really help customize and tweak that message specifically to them so that they do see you as the number one candidate who they're going to extend the offer to. And when you showcase yourself as a number one candidate like that, you now generally have a lot more negotiating power as well. So when it's time to negotiate your offer, if they know that you are the number one candidate far and above everyone else that they've talked to, they're much more likely and willing to find some extra money for you if that's what you're asking for.
Yeah, absolutely. I love all of that. What's your thought process? So if you're going to be like a seller, do you recommend a more aggressive approach, like asking for the job, like we talk about in sales, asking for the order or asking for the business? Does it depend on kind of the circumstances, or is that part of one of the ways you can differentiate by just saying and showing how much you want the job, in addition to once you show that you're the right person for it?
I think that's a bit of a personal preference, and I think it
Yeah.
also kind of depends upon the company culture.
Right.
So I think that just goes back to knowing your audience and being
It
able to
could
read your
backfire
audience to say,
if
like, it can. And I feel like that's a strategy that people used to use a lot, like
Yeah.
maybe a few
A little more
decades
old
ago, people would
school.
say, I think it is a little bit more old school, but I think in the right environment, it definitely could still work. Generally, what I like to do towards the end of an interview is I will typically say, hey, we've covered a lot of areas here today. I'm curious, in reflecting back on our conversation today, are there any other details that you might need to know about me to make the best hiring decision? Because then really what you're doing is you're asking for real-time feedback. And this is a really common concern that I hear from a lot of job candidates is that they go through the whole process and then they get passed over and they have no idea why. And then they ask for feedback, and companies will rarely ever give you feedback after the whole process is said and done. But if you ask for feedback, and the reason they do that is they don't want to be liable. They could end up saying something where then all of a sudden you're gonna be waving the discrimination flag and whatnot. And so they would rather just not share any feedback at all. But if you ask for feedback real time as part of your interview process, that's the time and space to get it. And it's also a time and space for you to overcome any objections that might show up. So if you say, hey, we've covered a lot of ground here today. But I also realize, we probably could have kept talking for another 2 hours. I have a lot more information that I could share with you about my past background work history. Are there any key areas that we covered that you feel like you need additional details on? How are you going about making your hiring decision? And so then doing that, it really gives you an opportunity to kind of have that last opportunity to share any extra details about yourself. And you can really read a lot into how they respond to that type of question. You can read a lot into, are they considering you as a top candidate, or were there some key areas that maybe you should have expanded upon more, or now you can take the opportunity to expand upon it more before the official interview process is done.
Yeah, I
So
like that.
that's probably how I would approach that process. And then and you can always reiterate how excited you are for this opportunity, and I like to make it be as results focused as possible. So instead of just saying, "Hey, I'm really excited about this opportunity. I'd love the opportunity to come and work with you," tell them, use this as an opportunity to tell them why, and it's another opportunity to reiterate why you're the top candidate for the position. Oh, I'm you know I had such a great conversation here today. I'm really excited about this opportunity. And if I was to step into this role, I would be really excited about jumping into this key initiative and helping you accomplish the results that we just talked about, within the first 90 days of being in the job. And I would get real specific about metrics and results and things like that, because those things stand out, and that matters when they're looking at two candidates side by side and they're like, well, this Both people are really excited, but this one is really excited about helping us solve our actual problems. If you were in the hiring manager's shoes and you were looking at two candidates, apples to apples, like which one are you going to want to choose? The one who just says they're excited, or the one who says, I'm excited and I want to help accomplish these very, very specific results for you. And here's how I would go about doing that.
And I've done that before. Yeah, no, I love it. So let's talk about you a little bit. Tell us how you kind of got into this space. Tell us a little bit about your practice, what you help folks with, and what you're excited about today.
Yeah. So my company is Dynamo Careers, and we typically work with mid to senior level professionals, usually in the tech industry, not always. I live in the Seattle area, you know, which is a very big tech hub. And so I oftentimes end up working with folks in Seattle and the Bay Area and, you know, many of the other tech hubs throughout the U.S. But I work with people across all over the nation, all over the U.S., primarily tech, but not always. And generally folks come to me if they're looking to make some sort of, you know, big jump or leap in their career. So whether they're looking to become more of a specialist, recognize as more of an expert in their field, or they're looking to, you know, up level into management or into a higher level of a leadership role. And what I do is I help folks get extreme clarity on who are they as a professional, like what have they been doing and how can we leverage that to help them, you know, move into something different, better. And different and better can look a number of different ways. Sometimes that's how do we help you make a whole lot more money, which is definitely a huge component of what I help clients do. Sometimes that's like, how do I get promoted? And sometimes that's how do I have better work-life balance? Or how do I work for an organization that I actually care about? So no matter what, we're kind of looking at all of those things because we really want to try to get all of those things into, you know, a single opportunity moving forward. And then what we do at Dynamo Careers is help people figure out exactly what that is. And then how do you tell the story and implement that entire thing? So how, you know, how do you build your brand as a professional? So we would redo your resume, your LinkedIn profile, cover letter. We talk all about, you know, how to approach the job search process. We actually offer a done-for-you job search service. So if you're too busy and you don't want to be submitting all those applications, we can do that for you. And then we talk about networking, interviewing, salary negotiation, and also, you know, how to hit your, you know, how do you start your new job, hitting the ground running, making sure you're building a strong reputation for yourself right from day one. And that you're then, you know, starting to pave the way for the next opportunity moving forward from there. So it's a pretty comprehensive service. Yeah. And, you know, mostly our clients make pretty big jumps in their income. And, you know, I've helped people make, I've helped people double their income and make up to $250,000 more than what they were previously making.
Love it. Well, that's impressive enough for anyone listening who wants to make $250,000 more. What's the typical engagement look like, folks? Well, obviously, it's as probably as quickly as you can find a job. But what's the average engagement? Is it 3 months, 6 months? How long do people work with you?
Yeah. It does vary by every client. Every client is just a little bit different because every situation is a little bit different. We always say 6 months or less. You know, the fastest that I've helped a client get a job is 1 month. And that's even like with, you know, doing the upfront strategy work, recreating their profile, you know, helping them apply for jobs and get interviews. So I'd say the fastest is like a 1 month turnaround. And I would say that is pretty fast. I always like to be very transparent and, you know, very honest with people up front. And then, so I say within 6 months is very achievable. Sometimes that's like the 3 to 4 month mark. And then, you know, I will say sometimes the more senior level roles, if it's like a senior level leadership role, sometimes that can take a little bit longer, but mostly just because there's fewer opportunities. Right. And generally what folks are looking for, both on the employer side and on the employee side, tends to be much more niche focus and very, very specific by the time that you get into the later stages of career. So if you do find yourself in the later stage of career, just know that sometimes it can take a little bit longer. It doesn't always have to. And it also depends upon, you know, how much activity is going on, you know, like how active are people in applying for jobs, showing up for interviews, and, you know, how eager are they? Like, how hungry are they? And how quickly do they want it? I think that also has a really big, you know, play. That's a very big part of the equation.
Awesome. So how can folks get in touch with you? What's the best way to connect with you if they need help?
Yeah, absolutely. You can come to my website, dynamocareers.com, DynamoCareers.com. Yeah, so come check out dynamocareers.com. I do have a free assessment that you can take that it's called Does Your Work Work for You? So if you're curious about, you know, what's this next stage of your career look like, and you know, are you actually looking at all of the key components that you should be looking at as part of your decision-making process to see, you know, does my career work for me? What are some other things I should be looking at and thinking about? It's a really wonderful free assessment. You can find it right there on the homepage, and it'll give you a personalized output that will sign you up for my mailing list. So if you'd like to be on my mailing list, that's a great way to connect with me. You can also just go to our contact page, send me a message. And then I'm also quite active on LinkedIn. So you're welcome to look me up on LinkedIn by my name, Sonja Price, S-O-N-J-A-P-R-I-C-E. And would love to connect with you. So yeah, send me a message.
Yeah. So you've got great testimonials also on LinkedIn. You know, there are folks that have worked with Sonja that are, you know, doing some testimonials for her. So, well, this has been great. I've really enjoyed it. I'm so glad you joined us today. I'd love to have you back at some time, because there's probably a lot we didn't even get to. But Sonja Price, thanks so much for coming. Look forward to having you on again, but really enjoyed it today. And thank you everyone for joining.
Thank you, Dan. Yeah, such a joy to be here with you today. Thank you so much.
Same. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Sonja. Bye, everybody.